love.
This video is a message from a little boy named Salman. He disappeared 5 years ago in Syria during the war to defeat ISIS. He still hasn't been found. My name is Poonam Taneja. I'm traveling to Syria to find out what happened to Salman and the thousands of children like him, lost in one of the most dangerous places on earth. From BBC Sounds and CBC Podcasts, Bloodlines. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast.
The presumed vehicle of O.J. Simpson is still traveling very slowly northbound along the 5 freeway, coming up again towards the 91 intersection. At that point, we'll just have to wait and see which way he's going to go. But at this point, it's still a fairly laid-back situation, a dangerous situation at the same time, because, again, the Highway Patrol does not want to intimidate, and I repeat, do not want to intimidate this vehicle into doing anything that they really don't want him to do. And the main thing is to get him pulled over as safely as possible. And there's only a couple ways that'll happen. One is him just pulling over and or running out of gas. So at this point, we can only pray that they'll be able to pull this off in a safe measure.
If you are of a certain generation, chances are you remember exactly where you were when you watched that. O.J. Simpson's white Ford Bronco rolling down the L.A. freeway. Behind him, looking like a flock of geese, a group of LAPD cruisers hot on his trail. The whole chase was filmed live by news choppers and broadcast around the world. But of course, the media frenzy didn't end there. After Simpson was charged with the murder of his former wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ronald Goldman, his trial was again broadcast live to millions.
If I put this knit cap on, who am I? I'm still Johnny Cochran with a knit cap. And if you look at O.J. Simpson over there, and he has a rather large head, O.J. Simpson in a knit cap from two blocks away is still O.J. Simpson. It's no disguise. It's no disguise. It makes no sense. It doesn't fit. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
That is one of O.J. Simpson's defense lawyers, Johnny Cochran. Today, we know his trial and ultimate acquittal not only changed television, but was a defining moment in American culture when it came to race, justice, and much more. O.J. Simpson died earlier this week. And for more on the impact he had, I'm joined by Dave Zirin, sports editor for The Nation. Dave, good morning.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Where were you when the Bronco chase was happening?
I was watching my beloved New York Knicks play against the Houston Rockets in the 1994 NBA Finals with a huge group of very serious Knicks fans. And I'll never forget, our jaws were on the floor at what we were seeing. And then about 10, 15, 20 minutes in, we were screaming for the game to come back on. It was a very, very odd moment, to be sure.
Before the Bronco chase, who was O.J. Simpson? Just remind us who this person was.
I mean, O.J. Simpson was, of course, a Hall of Fame running back, but he was more than just the first person to rush for 2,000 yards in an NFL season, an NFL Hall of Famer, a former Most Valuable Player. He was more than that. He was a pop cultural phenomenon. He was a figure who did national commercials for companies like Hertz, one of the few Black spokespeople in national commercials in this country. He was seen as somebody who was very safe, very palatable for mainstream America, and somebody who could be counted upon to sell products and shake hands.
Talk a little bit about the trial in the context of that. We heard, I mean, Johnny Cochran, and those are lines from that trial that people, again, of that certain generation, mine included, can recite from memory. What was different with this trial? Because there'd been big trials with lots of media attention before this, but what was different about this case?
This was the trial of the century. And other trials have been called that, but this was it. And it was because it absolutely enraptured and transfixed the entire country. And it did that because of fame and celebrity, of course, O.J. Simpson being who he was. But it was also because it brought up the issues that I think in so many respects define the United States of America and frankly define our lack of unity in this United States of America, issues of race and racism, whether O.J. Simpson was being railroaded by the Los Angeles Police Department, issues of gender and gender violence, the history of spousal abuse that was documented between O.J. and his murdered ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, estranged wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and of course the murdered Ronald Goldman as well needs to be mentioned. It also brought up a ton of issues about the question of celebrity and whether you can buy your way out of any crime if you're able to get the kinds of lawyers that can do that. So all of these issues that I think divide, frankly, this country, the United States today, were put on very stark display in the 1990s. So the hangover of this trial and what it meant to the United States still lives with us in 2024.
The piece that you wrote in The Nation this week said O.J. Simpson was a Rorschach test for America. Tell me more about that.
Well, when you see O.J., it wasn't just about seeing a trial. It was about, for I think, one of the things that united this country in that moment was when you looked at O.J. in the trial, you looked at what you thought was rotten and wrong about the United States. Now, for some people, what was rotten and wrong was the idea that there was even this interracial relationship in the first place. There was a lot of racism around the O.J. trial between O.J. and Nicole Brown Simpson. For some people, when they saw O.J., they saw the specter of celebrity justice and justice for the wealthy being different than justice for working class and poor people. But for other people, they saw O.J. and they saw a racist criminal justice system that was out of control, and not even O.J. Simpson, with all of his fame and celebrity, was safe from being railroaded by a corrupt police department in Los Angeles. And we have to remember, there's a societal context for this. O.J.'s trial in 1994 is just 2 years after the L.A. riots, which followed the beating of motorist Rodney King, mm-hmm. which, I mean, and that in and of itself was a setting for the trial where many people, particularly many Black Americans, particularly many Black Angelenos in Los Angeles, saw what was happening to O.J. as part of a continuum of racist abuse by the police. So that's what I mean by it was a Rorschach test. People weren't just seeing O.J. They were seeing what they felt like was wrong and rotten about the country itself.
O.J. Simpson once said that his greatest achievement was that people looked at him not as a Black man, but as a man. Well, how did race come into how he lived his life and the way that he threaded his way through American society, as you said, an all-American hero before this trial?
Well, O.J. was somebody who came up in the late 1960s, early 70s in college and the National Football League. And so he was coming out of a period that was known as the revolt of the Black athlete, where athletes like Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, Tommy Smith and John Carlos, Wyomi Atias, a lesser known brilliant political athlete. They were all known as people who were using their platform of sports to speak out for racial justice. O.J. extremely consciously decided that he was going to be a break from that and not be somebody who used his platform to speak out for civil rights, but somebody who attempted to be, to use the terms of today, post-racial. This idea that he was somebody who can sell products, be commercially viable, and be seen as white by white America, not first and foremost as a Black American, but as an American. Now, what happened with the trial was for O.J., it was like, okay, I guess I am being seen as a Black American. And for it was common parlance to say in the Black community that it took O.J. to be arrested to find out just how Black he in fact was.
I mean, that you talked about him being a pitchman. That was complicated, right? When he did those ads for Hertz and he was running through the airport, the story was that Hertz was concerned that the image of a Black man running through an airport could threaten people. And so they had white people who were on the sidelines kind of cheering him on, right? Saying, go O.J. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And making sure he was wearing a three-piece suit, which, of course, we all wear when we run around in the airport hurdling bags. But it was all set up in a certain way to make O.J. as unthreatening as possible. And, of course, you know, even an elderly lady in that commercial screaming, yeah, go juice. Like it was very carefully constructed with a very sharp eye on race. So for all of O.J.'s pre-1994 protestations where he would say, I'm not Black, I'm O.J., the people honing his commercial image certainly understood the racial dynamics at play.
How did race reveal the fracture that has existed for decades, for centuries in America to be renewed? What was the place of race in that trial?
Well, what was fascinating and elucidating and eye-opening for so many people was this idea that the entire country could be watching this trial and yet draw entirely different conclusions from the trial itself. So everybody's looking at one reality, yet their own personal lived experiences have them process that reality in an entirely different way. So what it revealed, and this is all by polls and statistics, is that you could watch this trial, and if you were white, overwhelmingly, you're going to be saying, this guy is guilty, and he needs to go to jail the rest of his life or even get the death penalty for what happened. It's as clear as day he did it. And yet for a lot of Black Americans, they looked at this and they saw a very real case, you know, whether OJ was guilty or not. They saw police misconduct. They saw racist police officers who used the N-word on numerous occasions on recordings. They saw tainted evidence. They saw OJ's lawyers destroy the prosecutor's case on so many different grounds. And they said, if OJ can be convicted based upon how poorly the prosecution has presented its case, then what hope is there for any of us who can't afford the Johnny Cochran's and F. Lee Bailey's and Barry Scheck's of the world?
This trial was a circus, but at the center of it was the murder of two people. What sort of justice do you think Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman ultimately got?
Well, they got no justice at the trial, that's for sure. It was followed up with a civil case where OJ had to pay $33 million to the families of Simpson and Goldman. And then that was followed up in a very bizarre case where OJ, I believe it was in 2007, was attempting to by violent force get some of his memorabilia that he said was stolen from him back in Las Vegas. And that was an odd case because OJ was convicted for 33 years in that case. 33 years, which mirrored the $33 million that he was told that he had to pay to the family. And for a lot of legal observers at that time, including people who wanted OJ Simpson to be convicted in 1994, that seemed like a very bizarre case of American justice run amok. The idea like, okay, OJ, we're convicting you for this crime regarding your memorabilia, but we're actually convicting you for what happened to Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. So it has been a twisted legal path over the last 30 years, and one that certainly was not forgotten. It's reminiscent of one of OJ's dream team lawyers, a guy named Carl Douglas, who said that, you know, OJ Simpson, he said, hey, you might win in the fourth quarter, meaning getting an acquittal, but they will get you in the fifth quarter. And that really is what happened from a legal perspective.
There are two extraordinary pieces of television that explore who O.J. Simpson was, documentary Made in America and the TV series American Crime Story, The People versus O.J. Simpson. When you look back, and you wrote about this in the piece, you talked about how we want to understand O.J. himself because we intuit that to understand him is to understand our country today, divided, embittered, and imperiled. What does O.J. mean to the United States now?
I mean, I think you saw this yesterday. I think what O.J. means now, first of all, is the trial launched an utter debasement of United States popular culture, like everything from court TV to yakking cable heads to the Kardashians and reality television. All of this finds its genesis in that O.J. Simpson trial. And when you look at the way we speak to each other today, like on social media, being the most prominent example, but also on all sorts of cable news where people are not looking for any sort of common ground, but we're actually favoring and financing the loudest, most divisive voices. All of that is a legacy of this trial and how the trial was discussed. So when we go back and look at OJ 30 years ago, what we're also really looking at is a kind of Rosetta Stone of how did we get to where we are with a shared agreement, as if there really only is this one shared agreement, it feels like, that where we are is not where we want to be.
Dave, good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Dave Zirin is the sports editor for The Nation.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.